What is up, everybody? Welcome back to The Rehearsal Report. Today on the podcast, we have a very special guest, Mariah Little. Mariah is a 2019 graduate of Ithaca College's musical theater program, where she has a bachelor's of fine arts degree. Her recent theater credits include Celie on the national tour of The Color Purple, Dorothy in The Wiz at Virginia Repertory Theater, and she's also the creator of and co-host of the Christian-based podcast Plug In, available on all streaming platforms. Welcome to The Rehearsal Report, Mariah.
Hey, thank you for having me, Rachel.
It's so great to see you again. You were a senior at Ithaca when I was a first year, and we both worked on Ragtime together, and
yes.
Look at you now.
Now, yes, what a time. Oh, my goodness.
Seriously. So, of course, in true theater school fashion, we have to start out with some icebreakers.
Okay.
So, first question for you. What is your favorite color?
My favorite color is green.
Lovely.
Like, I have to be specific. Not like a lime green, not like a forest green, but like right in the middle, nice soft green.
Like the very lovely headphones that you're wearing right now.
Exactly.
So what was the last thing you ate today is the next icebreaker.
I just made a really good Asian sesame tofu. Ooh. And some mixed vegetables. Very good.
Fabulous. And lastly, I'd like you to tell a story about the closest object to you.
My water bottle. This lovely blue Contigo water bottle that I always have when I don't need and always forget when I absolutely need it. So.
Love that. Absolutely. So we're going to start out by diving into what I like to call your tragic backstory, which okay. is how theater began for you. So where did that journey start? Because you don't become Celie in The Color Purple overnight. So where does it all begin for you?
Well, I started singing like almost out the womb, to be honest. But when I was about 6 or 7, that's when I started singing, and I sang in my church choir. And when I got to high school, there was a performing arts school that actually I teach at now, funny enough. But I knew I wanted to sing. I wanted to go to a performing arts school, but all they had was drama. Unbeknownst to me, there was an actual like chorus that I could have joined and, you know, a vocal department. But all I saw that had music and that had singing included was theater, musical theater. So I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. And I ended up loving it. My first production was Footloose, and I was in the ensemble. Yeah. Mind you, I couldn't dance then. I can barely dance now. So it probably wasn't the best show to start with. But the second show of that season was Ragtime. So if you know me, you know my history with Ragtime. I've done Ragtime 3 times. So that was my first time. But that's when I really was like, okay, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. This is mm-hmm. where I feel comfortable expressing myself and making mistakes and not being judged for it, but being able to grow in that. It's pretty profound for a 12, 13 year old to feel and think.
Yeah.
But I just knew in that moment that this is where I wanted to be. And the mm-hmm. rest is literally history.
That's amazing. At what point, so did you always know? You kind of touched on that you always knew that this was what you wanted to do forever, but at what point did you decide to actively make that choice? So like, when did it first occur to you that you could go to college for this?
Yeah. So I always knew that I wanted to sing. I always thought I was going to be Beyonce. And then theater came along and I was like, wow, okay. So I knew that I fell in love with it and I really, really liked it. I didn't think I didn't think I could do it because I didn't see a lot of people like me doing it. Mm-hmm. I was the only Black girl in my class in high school who was actually serious about it. As I got older throughout my high school career, there were some other people that came along, but they, you know, weren't going to college for it. So it was about my junior year, because that's when you start looking at colleges, right? Mm-hmm. It was the beginning of my junior year, and I was talking with my teachers, and they were like, do you want to do this? Like, for real, for real? And I was like, I think I want to do this for real, for real. So we started talking about colleges and, you know, different career paths that were most accessible to the musical theater performer. Now, I have thoughts about this, and I don't know what you're going to ask in a little bit later, so I'll hold it. But that was about when I realized that I can do this for the rest of my life and like actually get paid for it. Like I can be an actress, a singer, and a mover. not a dancer. All at the same time.
You're not dancer first.
No, not even dancer at all, if we're being honest. But but I can do all three of those things and get paid for it and still call it a job and be in love with my job every day. So
I love that. So it seems like it was really encouraged in your early education to pursue this.
Yeah.
Now you can tell me if this is not something you'd like to talk about, but how did your family react to this dream?
Well, you know, as any parent, maybe not any parent, but as most parents who have children involved with theater are, they'll say, well, do you have a backup plan? Do you have a plan B because you're not going to make enough money as a performer and blah, 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 blah. Whatever. That was my parents too, though. They were very adamant about me having a minor, having another option. And as much as they supported me and my performance endeavors, you know, taking me to rehearsals, driving me to and from performances, all those things, I think they were concerned about my future as a practical human being able to support myself. And I think as much as I brushed them off, I think this pandemic has proven, almost proven that thought process that they had. And I say almost because while the act of performing is not a thing right now, still so many ways that I've been able to hone in on my craft. And I don't think of it as a plan B or an alternate or a minor or anything. Not that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a minor, but I think that to be an artist, you have to be well-rounded. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was younger, I thought about performing being the end all be all. And as much as I still want to be a performer, but it doesn't hurt to have other tricks and tools of the trade in your back pocket as well. So that those moments when you're not performing, because let's face it, booking a job is fun. When you book a job, it's kind of hard. It's difficult. Uh-huh. So those moments when you're not on stage, what are you doing? You know, I don't want to spend the rest of my life waiting tables between gigs. I mean, there's, again, nothing wrong with that. And I have done it before, but why not do something that can still push me as an artist? So now that I'm older, I realize that's what my parents wanted, but I think the way that they delivered it and the way that I understood it, very different.
And we've talked about it before on this podcast a bit, how a lot of times that concern does so often come from a place of love and just the idea of wanting your kid to be okay, like to know that they're going to be okay. And sometimes that's hard to guarantee in this industry, as this gestures broadly to the last year has proven sometimes. So when you were looking at theater schools, what programs stood out to you, and what were you looking for to get from your education when you first started out?
It sounds like the question they asked me in the audition room. I knew, because I was so new to musical theater. I started musical theater my freshman year of high school, which in comparison to a lot of the people in those audition rooms, is very late to the game. So I knew that I wanted to grow as an artist, but I knew that I wanted to grow as a human too. You know, they always say the college is the best 4 years of your life, or is it high school? I don't know. One of those 4 year.
Depends on who you talk to. It seems to be those 4 years for some people. I don't know.
Right. And I just knew that, well, at least I'll say the 8 years between high school and in college, those years of your life between the ages of like 13 and 19 or 20 or whatever. I do math apparently. Between those years though, that's when you really get an understanding of yourself and who you are as a human. And I knew that I wasn't done figuring that out after high school. So I wanted to be in a place where I could comfortably, like I said before, make mistakes and still be okay when I get back up and not feel bad or feel judged for it, which is very hard to come by in theater, in performance. theater in general, don't get me wrong, but when performance, especially the way of performance now, and gratefully, thankfully, it's been changing as a result of all the movements that have taken place and within the last few years. But I mean, I think people expect you to be this like cookie cutter perfect performer, the way that you look, the way that you sing. And, you know, it's very hard to own a sense of individuality with that kind of mindset across the board. But I knew that if I was going to be okay, if I was going to make it in this business, not financially, but mentally, I had to be okay with who I was as a person. In order for me to be okay with that, I have to figure that out first.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I had a lot of schools on the list. I started with 10 on my list and I only ended up auditioning for 3. So I had the big school names. I had University of Michigan. I had UHeart. I had Ithaca, of course. I had Carnegie Mellon. I had CCM. I had all these big names. And I only ended up auditioning for Ithaca, Western Connecticut State University, and Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, CCM. Deep down in my heart, I wanted to go to Ithaca. I actually did a show right before my audition process with someone who was at Ithaca. He ended up being a senior when I was a freshman there. But I, you know, everything was up in the air at that time. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I really need to look into Ithaca because I like the way this guy acts. I like who he is as a person. Those are the things that I'm looking for. So, but I had a lot of teachers and faculty members around me that were CCM alum. And I kind of had this idea that I had to go to CCM if I was going to make it. And so I'm being very real and very raw with you listeners. So when I auditioned for CCM, I did not get the same feeling and vibe that I got as I did Ithaca. Yeah. It felt very competitive. It felt, and you know, this is just my experience, right? So it felt very competitive. It felt very like one track only kind of mindset or mentality. Like I had to be like this, and I had to kick my face and I had to look like this. And if I didn't do any of that, I couldn't be in this school. And I didn't get accepted. rightfully so though, not because of my talent, but because I knew what I wanted and I knew where I felt like I needed to be. I think that was God looking out for me. And I got accepted to Western Connecticut in Ithaca, and I chose Ithaca, and it was one of the better decisions that I've made in my life. So
that's so lovely. I think it's so hard sometimes to get the names out of your head when you're trying to pick a school, because a lot of times, I mean, the reality is that sometimes in this business, the name does make a difference.
It's true.
And especially when you're young and you're first looking at schools, like you want that big name. And I mean, Ithaca is a big name too in the theater community, but it's a hard thing to navigate.
It is. And I think now that I'm an educator, which is so funny coming out of my mouth, but I have kids who are or were auditioning for schools, and you know, now they're waiting for their acceptance letters and things of that nature. And I was actually talking with one of my students yesterday, and they didn't end up getting into their top schools. And I sat with them and I talked to them. I was like, well, think about it. You only get out of these programs what you put in.
Yeah.
And of course, you have different teachers and different professionals with different levels of skill and things of that nature at these different institutions. But at the end of the day, if you know what you want and you're not getting exactly that from this institution, you could go to another school, but you could also, you know, do the work yourself, which, you know, no one wants to hear, right? I'm paying $60,000 a year. Why do I need to do more work when the people that are there are supposed to be doing it for me? But I mean, if it's a hunger, if it's a drive, if it's a passion, then it doesn't feel like work. All of those emotions are the ones that are driving you to your success. And at that point, it doesn't matter where you go. I could have gone to a community college here. With the passion that I have for theater, I think it would have been still been applicable at any rate. And my success, who's to say? You know what I mean? Because it's all about who you know as well. So the connections that you make are a huge thing. And, you know, I might have not been able to make the connections here in Connecticut that I had in Ithaca, but that's not to say my success would have been any different, like in terms of how much success I would have. It'd just be a different route or a different way of approaching that success. So I think it's very important to break that barrier on our minds of, you know, I have to go to the best school, because here's the other thing. I went to Ithaca, but I am seriously in debt.
Oh yeah, same here.
I am seriously in debt. And you know, that is not something that people want to be in. And again, top schools are great, but if it doesn't fit you financially, if it does not fit you mentally, if it does not fit you as a human first, then an artist, then it's not worth it.
That's the other thing. Like, you're a human first, and such a weird part of the college search that I feel like not enough people talk about is like, sometimes the vibes just aren't right for you. It can be the best program or the best degree in the world. And like, if you don't feel like you're at home, if you don't feel like you can be yourself here,
yeah,
not worth it.
That's what it is. And I'm so glad you said it, home, because it is your home for 4 years, right? It's the place that you rest your head. It's the place that you wake up. If you can't feel comfortable in that place, and granted, you know, Ithaca has had its issues, you know, not like paradise or anything.
Of course. Yeah. Every school has its flaws.
Exactly. But I know that after my audition, I went to, I think I went to the Waffle Frolic. Went to the Commons, and just walking down the Commons with my mom, I was like, I can see myself here for 4 more years. Like, this is definitely a place that I can call home. Mm-hmm. And I did. So you have to make sure that you can find that wherever you end up.
Yeah. So moving forward a little bit, you chose Ithaca. You decided to make it your home for the next 4 years. You walk in Dillingham Center, that beautiful red carpet. Did you find college like the movies? Let's start there. So how much of it aligned with what you imagined theater school to be?
None. You know, they don't show you the glitz and the glam. They only show you, the glitz and the glam of college and going to a theater school. I remember fondly, so I'm sure every school has this, but Ithaca has president's hosts, which are the tour guides for the school. And I remember one of my friends sobbing on the red carpet as a tour was going by. And they like looked up and glared and they were like, yeah, it's not all rainbows and sunshine here. Like, they didn't say it directly to them. Thank goodness. But it was just so hilarious to, you know, have your sights set on the school and then look down and you see someone sobbing.
Like, bad days still happen even in college, y'all.
It's so true. And they don't tell you that. It's certainly not like the movies, but I think, to be fair, no one would watch the movie if it was the truth, if it was the honest truth about how college really was. Or no one would go to college, one or the other. So
that's true. So what sorts of things over the course of your formal education did you feel like they really helped you to get to where you are today? Like, what was the thing that you feel like, well, I guess I should start with, do you think that looking back, Ithaca was what helped you get to where you are today?
Oh yeah. I think for me specifically, especially because I didn't have any formal theater training besides high school, I was still very, very new to it all. And you know, high school theater is high school theater. And I think just understanding that you have to be someone else for a period of time is what I got during my high school years. And, you know, I feel like I'm still learning how to act, which isn't like a bad thing. I think once you get over the fact that, you know, you're never going to know it all, I think it's easier to accept the fact that you can still learn even after college. But during college, like answering the question that you asked me, during college, I was able to take away the skill of inserting myself into this character for X amount of hours and then putting it back on the shelf, which is something so detrimental to the human actor, the psyche of a human actor, because you can get lost in some of these roles and not know how to, you know, bring yourself back to the table or bring them out of you. So separating the two has been one of the best things that I've learned how to do, especially with a role like Celie. I wouldn't want to stay in that for more than 2.5 hours. It's a lot.
It's heavy.
It's a lot, but you know what? At the end of the day, and this is something great that I've taken away too, it is someone's story that needs to be told. And it's such a privilege to be able to do that, to be able to tell that story. But it's not my personal story. I might have some aspects that are similar, you know, things of that nature, but at the end of the day, it is someone's story. So I have to be careful to not let myself into that and then vice versa, not let their story into my life, because you know, depending on the nature of the story, like The Color Purple, it's not something you want to walk around with all day, every day. It's, you know, it's tough. Mm-hmm. So being able to acknowledge the work, say thank you to the work, thank you to the character. One of my teachers taught me that. And then let it be. Hang it up like an umbrella after a rainstorm. Hang it up and you pick up the umbrella the next time you go out into that storm. So
that's such a lovely way of putting it. I like that. The idea of hanging it up. I'm going to use that if you don't mind. I think
do it, please. Credit to Cynthia Henderson.
Of course. Yeah, I just got off a show just working in a production team aspect, not an actor, but it was a heavy show, and I felt it. You feel it wearing on people, like going into a very sad headspace for hours and hours, yeah, weeks upon weeks. Yeah. And it does wear on you. And I do think that that is something, like, we're moving a bit away as an industry from the whole, like, method acting, fully embodying everything 24/7 type mentality, because I think everyone just collectively realized it wasn't great for our collective mental health.
That part. Exactly.
Yeah. But I've definitely been seeing a change, and I really like the way that you phrased that. So you graduated from Ithaca in 2019, correct? And then you were Dorothy in The Wiz, and then it felt like pretty quickly you ended up on the national tour of The Color Purple. Can you tell us a little bit about that,
that journey,
and how you learned throughout that process?
Everything happened so fast. So I graduated, I think, like May 19th or something like that. May 20th, I was on a train to Virginia to do The Wiz. And that show ended in August, but prior to the ending date, about a week or two before closing, I got a call from my agent to submit for The Color Purple. And in my head, I was like, I'm not going to be The Color Purple. Like, I'm not old enough to play Celie. I'm not old enough to tell this story. Like, what? No, but I'm going to submit myself. I'm going to do what my agent told me to do. Mm-hmm. One night before playing Dorothy, right? I go out, the show starts at 7:30. So it's 5 o'clock and I'm recording sides from The Color Purple. I'm singing I'm Here at least four times before I have to sing Home and Ease On Down the Road. Like, two different worlds, both pretty loud, but two different worlds. I filmed all my sides and I submitted them. And so I closed the show in Virginia and then I went back home and heard back from them almost in, like, I think I want to say a day or two after I submitted them. And they said, we want to see you in person. Here's the date. Here's the address. Here are the sides that you need to have prepared. So it was about a week after I got home that I went to New York, which is only like an hour and a half from me. I did the callbacks and they called me back again the next day and I went back one more time, and literally I was on my way to another audition. I think it was for Waitress National Tour, and as I was putting on my shoes, my agent called me, and I called him that morning and I was like, hey, like, I just sang I'm Here four times in the callback room. I really don't have much of a voice. Could we reschedule this Waitress audition? Like, can we do something? He was like, can you steam and drink some water? I was like, all right, sure. So I'm getting my shoes on and he calls me and he goes, so don't worry about the audition because you just booked Celie in the national tour of The Color Purple. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
I was like, what? Literally the first words that came, I said, what? He was like, no, yeah, you did it. And I started sobbing. So that's that journey. And oh my goodness. So a month after I closed The Wiz, I started rehearsals for The Color Purple. And a month after rehearsals started, we opened the show. And such a fast train. I mean, did not stop moving after college. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I was so grateful for that because it taught me how to grow up very fast as a human and as an actor, right? And I've never toured before. I've never really traveled a lot either. So it was hard not to get caught up in that aspect, remembering at the end of the day, I still have a job to do. Mm-hmm. So it definitely trained me in a professional way, how to maintain my time, how to manage my time, how to manage my health, how to choose, okay, I'm going to go out and go to the bars and I'm going to go home and sleep because I have to do this scene tomorrow and I have to sing this song tomorrow, which is super helpful now. Mm-hmm. super helpful now. But the process of becoming Celie, understanding Celie, recognizing her story, and honoring her story for what it is. I'll tell you right now, everything I learned in college, it's necessary and it's useful. I tell this to my students all the time. We're not saying this for our health. We're not telling you these tools for our health. It's because they are so vital. And you can get to a point where you're like Leonardo DiCaprio or Meryl Streep, and you don't have to write down your objective, your obstacles, your all these things. But right now we're not there yet. And I'll tell you what, it's going to take a long time before you get there. So learning these tools and now being able to apply it in a professional setting, really getting to sit in my New York apartment with my friends from college and their cat that runs over my script every 5 minutes, and just really being able to understand who Celie is and putting all of those tools to work and honing in on not even just how like Cynthia Erivo did it or LaShawn's or Fantasia, but understanding how my activity and what I breathe into this character makes a difference in how they move and how they walk and how they talk. Because essentially we're telling the same story, right? But we are different actors doing the same story. So what do I bring to the table that's different from everyone else? So again, understanding who I am as an actor and as a human and how that can be applied to the character and, you know, bring a breath of fresh air to the role. So that's a mouthful. All of that, I said all that to say that I've learned how to apply my knowledge, right? What I learned in college and as a human and as an actor. I sound like a broken record, but
absolutely though. Yeah. So I want to talk about the pandemic a little.
Yeah.
So obviously things kind of came crashing to a halt a year ago. But what's the last year been like for you in terms of that journey? Because as you said, you're a teacher now, you have this podcast plugin that's so lovely. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. We're actually, I think, almost a year to the day that we went home.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been actually shying away from this day and this like moment, this season. I've been off social media for a while, just because I knew what it was going to bring up. That was hard. It's really, really hard to be so fully invested in something that, you know, brings you joy. And then the uncertainty of it all is what really kind of like got at me, knowing that there's a pandemic, thinking that it's not going to be that big of a deal, thinking that you're going to be able to return to your job after a month, and then getting the closing notice 2 weeks after that you're not going to be doing this anymore, never knowing when theater is going to open up again, not knowing what you're going to do next. Cause you know, I had my life planned out. I was like, you know, tour is ending in May. I'm going to move to Brooklyn. But at the beginning of June, I'm going to keep auditioning. I'm probably going to wait tables in the meantime. Right. I had it all planned out and none of that happened. And I found myself sitting in my room, just looking at the walls and trying to figure out what purpose my life had at this moment. I felt like, and I sometimes still feel like this, if I'm not singing, if I'm not performing, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And that's when I had to be okay with not finding a second option or a backup plan, but finding something still involving my art, still involving my artistry in a different way. I had to, you know, am I going to be a teacher? Am I going to be on a podcast? Or am I going to do both? Like, and that's what ended up happening. But I had to learn that, you know, life is not linear. Our careers are not linear. And we have to be open to change. And I think it's so hard.
Yeah,
I think it's so hard because I think for me, I'm the kind of person that likes to control things, not in like a manic kind of way, but like I like to know what I'm getting myself into. I like to know what it is that I'm going to embark on before I embark on it. And because that was stripped away from me, because that aspect was stripped away from us with no sense of return, without, you know, any sense of guideline or not knowing when it's going to be back to normal, it hurts. It's hard to adjust to. And I find myself still adjusting to it now, even a year later, because we still don't know the course of this pandemic. It's a novel virus, right? So no one really knows how to navigate this. And just when you think that you know what you're about to do, another strain comes out. Right, exactly. So it's been very, very difficult, but it's not been impossible. And I think for me, because I am a Christian and I rely on God, I put my faith and my trust in God, that has been such a huge help for me, because it takes the weight off of my shoulders and, you know, it allows me to be okay with not figuring everything out, because that's what he's there for. And that's where the idea of the podcast came along. And I was able to really study that out with some friends and figure it out and, you know, understand that my purpose, my gift is singing, my gift is performing, but my purpose is to glorify God. Now, this is just me personally, right? So I don't want to offend anybody.
Yes, of course.
My purpose is to glorify God. And in that, I use my gifts to, you know, bring that to light, bring that to truth. And becoming one with that all over again has been so, I think I've been looking for satisfaction in the wrong things for so long that finally finding it in my faith has been the most rewarding aspect of this podcast. Mm-hmm. So that's how I've been able to deal. That's how I've been able to cope. Mm-hmm. It's just putting my faith in him and understanding that I'm not going to know what's going to happen next. I'm not even knowing what's happening right now, but that's okay because I know that everything that's supposed to happen is happening, and it's mm-hmm. happening for the greater good, not for, you know, not to happen against me, not to work against me, but it's for the good of my future. So mm-hmm. Again, a mouthful, but
yeah, absolutely. So now that you are a little bit, more removed from your formal education, your formal schooling, is there anything about the current system of theater education that you would change if you could?
Yeah. I, you know, the idea of diversity, inclusion, mm-hmm. Equality, I think it's very, very necessary, but I think that this sounds so bad. I think it's a hoax. And not because I'm against it. I'm very much for it. I don't think that we should be patting ourselves on the back for doing something that should have always been done. We have been a diverse people for as long as we can remember. And that should have always been a part of our curriculum. So I see a lot of theaters and a lot of schools that kind of pride themselves on being diverse, which is great, but we should have always done that. We should have always included those who were not the norm. Do you hear how bad that sounds? Because it is.
Yeah.
And that is very necessary, especially within the arts, because a lot of what we see has been made possible by contributors of color. Music, theater, playwriting, stage managing, all these different trades and aspects of theater that make it what it is, could not be possible without the works of BIPOC people.
Absolutely.
And I think that now that I'm understanding that, I've been so lucky to be in the position where I can teach other students about that as well.
Yeah.
In this semester, currently right now, I'm teaching a course on Pipeline by Dominique Morisseau, which is an incredible play, if you haven't read it, which talks about the school to prison pipeline. And while the racial makeup of my class does not benefit the play at all, or is not benefited by the play at all, in the ways that, you know, one that someone like me would understand and benefit from the play, I've been able to, with the help of my other teachers, really break it down in a way that they could relate to. Now, I told them from the beginning, none of y'all are going to play any of these roles in this show.
Yeah.
So get that out of your head. but you can still appreciate it for what it is. So the way we talk about Shakespeare and the way we talk about Tchaikovsky when we talk about classical music, the same way that we can talk about Dominique Morisseau and not just August Wilson, but Susan Laurie Parks and, not just, you know, there's just so many other people, Nilo Cruz, like all these wonderful contributors of art that deserve the same respect and observance as we do their counterparts. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've been really adamant about in this position and will be moving forward until I die.
Yeah, this industry has a long way to go, but grateful to people like you who are making sure that it's a priority. And it has been really great to see those changes happening more during the time that I've been in college too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's already a different place than it was when I first got there too.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say, looking back, what advice you would give to someone trying to decide if theater education is right for them?
I would say take a breath, because that's something that I didn't do when I was figuring out life at the age of whatever. Take a breath and know that life is not linear. And if you want to make a change, you can do that. And it might suck in the moment. It might be hard in the moment, but if it's not what your heart wants, then don't try to force it. It's never going to be comfortable if you try to force it. I shouldn't say comfortable, but it's never going to benefit you. You're never going to be satisfied. Yeah. Right. And I think that I aim not to say comfortable, because if you're comfortable, that means you're not growing, right?
Yeah.
You want to grow, but you also want to understand why those growing pains happen, right?
Yeah. And growing involves discomfort.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're for your good. You know, it's like when you lose a tooth and, you know, the new tooth is growing in, it hurts, but it's so that you can have teeth. I think it's just, it's important to recognize that, you know, it's not, if your heart's not in it, then it's not going to work for you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mariah. I have one more question for you. So this is part of a larger research study that I'm working on. So I believe that 90% of theater artists will have had this experience, and I'd like to see if it's true for you. So Mariah Little, have you ever been associated with a production of the musical Annie that left you with a little bit of trauma?
I can't say that I have, but I will say Annie is not my favorite musical. So I think associated in passing, sure. Yeah. Trauma.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm glad that you've been able to escape that stereotype. So
you're welcome.
Love that. So thank you again so much for joining us. Where can our listeners find you and learn more about your work?
Yes, I'm on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube under the handle Mariah Little. That's at MariahLittle. And then on YouTube, you can just type in my name, Mariah Little. Yep. I have, again, my podcast, which is at Plug-in Podcast now. And I want to say that's it. I'm working on getting some more stuff out there. So awesome. Hang tight, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, you can find us at The Rehearsal Report Pod on Instagram. Do you have any cool people that you want to hear from on this podcast? Do you want to be featured on this podcast? Send us an email at therehearsalreport@gmail.com. And thank you so much for joining us today. Never forget, whoever you are, wherever you are, theater's not an impossible dream, and you are not alone on this crazy journey. So we'll see you next week.